Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yes, hi everyone, and for the final time in 2020, welcome to the Gagnon Pod. David Wiener with you once again, joined by Michael Bridges and John Aloisi to talk about all the current issues in the Premier League and world of football, and present our Gagnon d'Ors, the awards from Off the Sport for the calendar year of 2020. So much to tuck into as ever. Let's get started. Gents, terrific to see you. John, you and I are looking as professional as ever. And Bridgie reminding us we've got to get some festive cheer into us. How are you, gents? Bridgie, how are you? You're looking
I'm very well, Div.
In your Olaf-inspired Christmas outfit.
Getting into the spirit and the swing of things. I've got the Christmas jumper on. The Pommies are renowned for Christmas jumpers, as you well know, Dave. So got the snowman with a carrot nose, and the wife said, why don't you do it in front of the Christmas tree? Because she's put a lot of effort into getting it looking very Christmassy. So I thought, you know, I'll do her the right thing, Dave. She thinks it's video call. She doesn't realise it's a podcast.
I have to say, it looks very good, Bridgie. And plus, looks like a lot of presents back there. Hopefully some are not all of them are for you.
I've been checking how many have got dad written on them, and there's not many.
Just in all honesty, where on earth do you get a shirt like that from? Seriously.
Dave, in the UK, the week building up to Christmas, it is all about Christmas jumper parties. People just go out, they get the Christmas jumpers. There is so many to choose from, and it's a big knitted woolly jumper. You don't get many options or many times to wear them in Australia, and when you do, it's only for 5 minutes. And I thought, I've got to get it out the cupboard, get the cobwebs off, and here it is.
Now, if I was Richard Bayless, I'd be making a joke about the two noses looking at me through the camera with the snowman's carrot nose on it. But I'm not Richard Bayless, so we're going to kick on, Bridgie. I would never do such a thing. John, what's caught your eye since we last spoke on the Gagnon Pod? It's not like there's been a shortage of football.
No, what hasn't caught our eye? The 7-0 Liverpool win. That's the biggest one that's caught my eye, because we spoke about at the beginning of the season, they were my favourites to win the title. Bridgie picked Man City. Sorry to bring that up, Bridgie, but and then with all those injuries, we thought, oh, maybe Liverpool could actually stumble here and struggle. But 7-0, 8 shots on target, 7 goals. That's incredible. And the goals were phenomenal. It was such a good, professional, ruthless performance. And they really made a statement beating a difficult Palace side by 7 goals.
Yeah, didn't they? What, you know what impressed me as well? The Mane substitution, when he's looking over going, are you kidding me? I can score a hat full of goals here. The rivalry and the competition between Mane and Salah is brilliant. And, you know, the gauntlet was thrown down by Klopp. Salah comes on, and I tell you what, his final goal was just a moment of brilliance in the Premier League.
Did either of you have a teammate like that?
Yeah, look, I think you always got a couple that are like that in your team, and you want that. You can't have too many, though. And look, and I'm sure Timmy Cahill won't mind me saying, Timmy was a little bit like that. Harry was a little bit like that. Yeah. That they, you know, they want to, it's about them grabbing the moment, grabbing the goals. Harry probably less so once he got a little bit older, but that's what made them special.
John, there's nothing wrong with that. And Dave, we understand that as long as it doesn't become toxic, it's all about having that rivalry on the field. I had it with Kevin Phillips. I always wanted to play in front of Kev Sunderland. He was the main man. When I got my opportunity, I was made sure that I was ready to come on and score goals, to try and just force the manager's hand to play in me. Off the field, me and Kev, absolutely brilliant. And John will say that when it becomes toxic, and the players aren't speaking in the dressing room and things like that, that's when it can get out of hand, because that spreads very, very quickly.
Yeah, well, clearly, given it happened about a year ago, if you remember, Klopp has kept a pretty good handle on it, because they'd be going okay in between then. So be interesting to see what happens there. And we're going to talk about Mo Salah a little bit later on, though, and I'll be interested if this comes up in that conversation, because he's done some interviews in Spain during the week, and they have made worldwide headlines overnight. So, or in the last couple of days. So we'll bring that up a little bit later. Just going to touch quickly on just the latest results in the Premier League by the time you listen to this podcast. And on Tuesday morning, the Monday night fixture in the UK was Chelsea 3, West Ham 0. John, a good result for Chelsea. The result, or the scoreline, sorry, possibly flattering the side with Tammy Abraham's late brace.
It did. Look, it was a pretty flat performance, if you want. You know, you can call it flat. They were doing the job. West Ham had a majority of the possession in the second half without creating any serious chances. And then Chelsea turned it on the last 10 minutes. So once the second goal went in, then they looked like they're free-flowing again. I think because they lost two on the trot, it was important that they got that win. And so it was more about getting the job done. But they've got... We know the firepower they got up top. So as soon as they start to click, like Pulisic and Werner can't buy a goal at the moment, mind you.
seven starts straight, actually, no goal.
Hitting the crossbar at the end, you just see the frustration in his face, like going, what do I have to do to get a goal? You know, 3-0, yes, it probably flattered them a little bit, but they deserve the win.
Hey, I'd rather be winning 1-2 or 3-0 when you're playing poorly or you're not dominating games. So I'm, as a Chelsea fan, which I am not, Dave, you are, you've got to look at that and think, you know what it is, if we're playing bad and we're getting results like that, you've got to be happy.
Yeah, look, they wrote it out. That was the thing, is that 1-0, they're on the back foot for a fair bit of that match and managed to actually reduce West Ham to not creating many chances, and then two really good goals at the end. But you touched on Werner. That's the other thing I want to ask both you strikers about. Can't buy a goal. He's getting into positions, but his finishing's leaving a little bit to desire, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. And Bridgie will, you know, touch on this as well. But
what are you trying to say? I missed lots of chances.
No.
You're going to touch on this.
I'm saying that we've all missed chances. All strikers miss chances. When things aren't going your way, they just don't seem to go your way. But once the ball hits the back of the net, they will start to roll again. Because his finish this morning, the one that hit the crossbar, wasn't a bad finish. You know, a little bit lower, that goes in and, you know, the confidence is back. There was one instance in the second half where Tammy Abraham crossed the ball and was just a bit too far in front of Werner. If Tammy Abraham hit that first time, Werner gets on the end of it. So those things aren't quite working out for him.
There was another moment in the first half, Pulisic did the same thing. He just held on to the ball too long and Werner had to get it out of his feet. And by the time he's tried that, you're snatching at things. So in hindsight, John's bang on what he's saying. Sometimes it's that little extra moment of the delivery when you get it earlier so you can adjust and refocus. And I'd be more worried if Werner wasn't scoring and wasn't getting chances. There's nothing worse. So, you know, when you analyse your own game and the manager and the coaches sit down with you and go, look, this is the situation you got in. You got in the position here. If this was delivered better, you might have scored at this moment. So it's still good signs that there's chances being created.
There's also some really interesting analysis for anyone listening that hasn't seen it from Alan Shearer, obviously the Premier League's greatest goal scorer, on the Optusport app, where he dissects where Tammy Abraham has improved and has a very similar thought to you both, that Werner's getting in the positions, but maybe Chelsea's supply wasn't quite where he needed it and he'd be banging them in if it was just that little bit better. So I recommend you watching or reading about that on the Optusport app if you have not. That win moves Chelsea up to fifth. It's so tight. You know, you're one game away from a crisis in the Premier League and you're one win away from being back on the verge of the top four. So it's quite incredible. But speaking of interesting results, which is putting pressure on coaches, Burnley beat Wolves 2-1 this morning. And there were some very interesting comments post-game by Nuno Espirito Santo about referee Lee Mason. Let's have a listen.
I don't like, but I must say it because I will not feel right. The referee doesn't have quality to whistle a game on a Premier League. This is a problem that we knew. We already had Lee Mason before. It's not about the crucial mistakes or the decisions. It's about the way he handles the game. The players get nervous, too much voices. He whistles by the voices. When some players shout, he doesn't have. So we are talking about the best competition, and clearly he doesn't have quality to whistle the game. I'm very disappointed to say this, really disappointed, but I'll not feel right if I didn't say it.
So, gents, goals from Ashley Barnes and Chris Wood got the job done for Burnley, who are now in a reasonable run of form. Wolves, it's an interesting reaction, John, from Nuno, because it was a reasonably otherwise what looked like a straightforward, disappointing loss, but quite wild post-match comments.
Yeah, he's either trying to put pressure on referees. I think it's more that he's under a little bit of pressure. They've spent a lot of money in the off-season, the season before last. I think the expectations are a lot higher now. It's not just about, oh, let's see if we can make European football. It's no, we need to make European football. We need to be pushing for Champions League. And they've, even though they had a decent start, they're a little bit hit and miss with their results. And I think that's why, and he probably sees it as well with Jimenez being out. That's a massive loss. That's a massive loss. So I think it's more pressure. That's why he's reacted the way he's reacted. He's feeling it a little bit now. This is his first real test because now they're no underdogs anymore. Now you expect Wolves to go and beat a Burnley easily, even though Burnley, let's give them their due respect. They're a difficult team to play against as well, and they deserve the win this morning.
Do you know what I think caught them out as well? They, you know, Wolves are that counter-attacking team. They'll sit back, they'll absorb pressure, they'll counter-attack. It was almost like two stalemates came up against each other, and Wolves have found themselves dominating the game. They've had the most chances. They didn't get as many chances on target as they would have liked, but the possession stats, the ball, it's almost like they ran out of ideas thinking, We don't find ourselves dominating games in this way. Burnley just absorbed, frustrated the hell out of them, and they couldn't counter-attack in behind because Burnley was so deep. And, you know, fair play to Dyche. He just said, we're going to play our normal game and see if we can scrape something and frustrate them. And that's what they did.
So, interestingly there, you know, Wolves, I mean, they beat Chelsea last start. So, when we talk about sort of week-to-week fortunes fluctuating, but they are only 11th. So, after disappointing missing out on Europe last year, it's just a bit of inconsistency there from Wolves. But Burnley, they're a point away from Arsenal, gentlemen, who are in 15th position. And Mikel Arteta overnight, I want to just ask you guys to try and make a bit of sense about what sense he's making of Arsenal's problems. We said last year we won against Everton with a 25% chance of winning. You win at 3-2. Last weekend, it was a 67% chance of winning any Premier League game in history and a 9% chance of losing. And you lose 3% against Burnley and you lose 7. And I'm lost. I'm lost. And I think he might be too with those quotes. Can you guys give him absolutely any hope going into this period?
I can give you 100%. That I had no idea what he was going on about.
I stopped reading the quote halfway through because I got to 7% and I'm like, all right, you've lost it. I've got no idea what he's talking about.
What he's trying to do, he's trying to say they're not as bad as what everyone's making out they are, but the table doesn't lie. Now, I think that he's trying to buy as much time as possible. That's what he'll be going to his own, like the owners, the hierarchy in the club, the people that make the big decisions. Look at our percentage rate. Look at our winning percentage rate. If we create this many chances or if we get into this area this many times, normally you'll win the football game. At the moment, we're not because we're low on confidence. But don't worry, we'll turn it around. I think that's what he's trying to say. But he's trying to convince people that aren't convinced.
Can I put it in my mindset, John? Right, you love this one. My analysis: he's on the escalator. He's in a shopping mall, and he's on the escalator, and he's trying to get up that escalator. Yeah, and it's going against him, and all the results and all the other teams and managers are at the top of that, just speeding it up like a treadmill. Going, come on, then catch us if you can. He's on a hiding to nothing. He is clutching at straws at the moment. I really feel for him. He's got so much going on. And when you've, you know, the culture that we talked about, he changed. Now the results are going pear-shaped. He's in a world of pain, man. And
it doesn't get any easier.
Nah, not this Christmas period. Have you seen what's coming?
Yeah. Tough period for him. Tough period for Arsenal because they are low on confidence. And they did have a decent start under Arteta when he first arrived. They won a major trophy, but you know what? They've had a really hard start to the season, and I can't see it turning that quick. Whether he's going to last the whole season, I don't know. I hope he does. I hope they give him time, but I'm not sure.
The best part about this, if people want to be entertained, is obviously watch all the matches on Optus Sport or listen to the Gagan Pod, Dave Wiener. But the Arsenal TV, if anybody gets a chance, that has been absolutely hilarious. Just watching these guys, they can't see anything constructive. It's just assassination after assassination. I've been loving it.
So in all seriousness, and you know, we have spoken about Arsenal a lot on the Gagan Pod in recent months about their culture and whatnot, but the reasonable patient person in all of us wants to say Arteta's going to be a great coach and they've got to give him time. But at what point does it become Oh my goodness. We've got to save this season. And the only way we can do that is a bit of, is something dramatic. Like, are the stakes that dramatic over the next, say, 2 to 3 weeks?
Yes, they are. Because you know what? If they start to fall into relegation zone, which they're not far off, mind you, it starts to become dramatic. And that's when they're going to need to make a decision. I think that what will buy them a little bit of time, if they get a few results over the Christmas period and they still do well in the Europa League, which, you know, they could, you know, go very far into that sort of competition. But I think that if they don't pick up results over this Christmas period and they start to drop into relegation, because let's not underestimate Fulham either. I think Fulham are playing good football.
They've picked up hugely, John, yeah.
They're a team that could pick up points and actually push Arsenal. Brighton will still pick up their points because I think they've played well most of the season. They just haven't picked up the points they probably deserved. And under Big Sam, you know, Bridgie, what he can actually deliver. It's not the prettiest to watch, but he can get results.
I think Arteta was delighted when he saw Sam sign for West Bromwich Albion, because I reckon Sam had been hanging around at the Emirates. Sam's CV was in there, I'm telling you. Now, that would have made I'd never thought I would ever see that in my lifetime. Sam Allardyce as the manager of Arsenal. Hey, I'll tell you what, it must have been pretty close.
Okay, so does he survive this period, Bridgie?
I think they're going to give him through the Christmas period. There's a lot of games come thick and fast. I think they've either got to do it now and get somebody in to give him a fresh charge to get through these games, or they've got to give Arteta the end of that Christmas and New Year period. And then once they get that little break and opportunity again, you get that window of a week to 2 weeks with the international break and things like that, possibly then. I think it's too soon now.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. A tough run, as you suggest. Now, one discussion they are not in as we head into the Christmas period of fixtures is the title race, where Liverpool are back on top, 4 points clear of Leicester, with United and Everton rounding out the top four, with Chelsea fifth. Tottenham, what, a week after we discussed them in the top of the table clash, they're sixth. Southampton seventh. Bridges tip Manchester City down in eighth. Now,
they've got a game in hand.
With a game in hand, true, as do United. Now, with Liverpool playing Palace, West Bromwich Albion and Newcastle before the year is out. John, after talking up a title race a few weeks ago, are we now talking up a case that it's Liverpool's to lose, maybe perhaps by the turn of the year?
I think it's too early to say that it's Liverpool's to lose, because I still think that the top sides, once they play Liverpool, might have a say in you know, getting results against them and them dropping points. I still think Man United... Don't underestimate where they've come from. We keep on writing Solskjaer off. I don't know why, because he seems to turn it around. You know, look at that result against the Leeds. I know that upset you, Bridgie, but what a massive result that is.
What game was that, John? I must have missed that one.
The thing is, Liverpool will get better, because they're going to have their players coming back from injury, with Thiago and the like coming back.
Oxlade-Chamberlain came on.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think, though, that Manchester United have got a lot left in them. Once they find their consistency, which they have away from home, and now after this win at home, maybe they might be a dark horse in actually pushing a Liverpool.
Right, I'm asking you straight out, Bridgie. Manchester City, Premier League winner, discuss.
If they sign a number nine, I can't say it enough. If they get somebody in that is going to score them goals in January, they're going to be in with a chance. If they don't, and they're going to rely on Aguero being in and out, Jesus and Torres,
oh, hang on. No, you're jumping down to eighth on the table. I'm sticking you up with I'm asking you the big question about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Oh, sorry, mate. What? Yeah. Can they win the title?
Can they win Manchester United Premier League champions this season?
No chance. Leeds played in their hands. It was counter-attack. So there was lots of space for Man United to get in there and exploit. If you have a look at a lot of the games, Man United's home result against Red Bull Leipzig, what do they play? A high pressing line. They got in behind them. I think what the difference between the Liverpool playing at Crystal Palace, they've put seven past them, a team that gets back in numbers. Manchester United find it very hard to break down them teams that aren't going to allow them to have any space. The Leeds played right to their hands. It was the movement, the forward runs, they couldn't handle it. And Leeds, Bielsa's not going to change that. So fair play, they had a goal, they got caught out. But United cannot win the title, no chance.
So you're saying, I mean, it was the dream scenario against Leeds. John, can Solskjaer find that balance and fix that very flaw that Bridgie pointed out, which is what's held them back so far?
Oh, that's a tough question. I don't think they have got it this season. I agree with Bridgie. I think when teams actually sit off or they're not playing so well, that they really struggle to create chances, especially at home. We look at the game against West Brom where they just won 1-0. They really struggled because of that factor of them sitting off. They're more likely to beat a Liverpool, a Chelsea, a Man City that come out and play. But when you come up against teams that sit off, they struggle. This is where it's going to be a big test for them against Leicester, because I think that Leicester are smart enough and also good enough to actually hold Manchester United, restrict that space for that counter-attacking football like Bridgie's saying. And so if they can actually beat a Leicester, then you have to start to think, well, maybe he can get it right.
So who is the greatest chance of threatening Liverpool? Is it Liverpool themselves or is it Leicester? Is it Chelsea? Is it Tottenham? Is it Everton? What are we throwing out?
I think you can't look past Man City. You know, and Tottenham are going to be in about, but realistically, being a supporter of them, it's not going to happen. I'd be looking at Chelsea and Man City. If anybody is really going to have a go, I'd be looking at them too. For the squad depth in Chelsea and the quality, when they get it right, and with Man City, you just never know what Pep's going to produce or that team. We've seen them destroy teams in the past and seasons gone by. We've only seen it once this season. And in January is going to be very interesting if they do splash out and get somebody. So they're the only two I can see.
I agree. I think Chelsea, Man City, and I'll throw Man United in the mix. I know that a lot of people don't think they can, but with some of the players they've got, you know, look, I look at Bruno Fernandes, and we're going to talk about it later about, you know, who you believe the signing of the season and whatever else. He's when he plays well, Man United win. And majority of the time, he's playing well. He sets up chances. He scores goals. He's involved in everything going forward. And then, you know, Rashford's looking strong. Martial's looking better than he had been in the past. You know, good to see James come in and score. They still got Greenwood that comes in. Cavani's still, you know, not 100% fit. They've got firepower. How can you go past a team with so much firepower?
I'll tell you Bridgie's
grinning.
I just like the way you've just sprinkled a little bit of a taster on there with Bruno Fernandes saying, oh, he's in your mix for Ballon d'Or signing of the season.
We'll take a commercial break now. Hang around
later.
He's
getting the listeners hanging on. It's got me fascinated. Oh, he's trying to make me change my mind. There you go. Yeah. One or two.
Bridgie, I feel like we've been talking about this for all year, but I just want to check in on how you're feeling about Jose 1 week on from talking him up as title challengers. It's been a pretty harrowing week. Does this now sort of start to change the emotions of Spurs fans now that we're at the awful style but not picking up point situation?
No, we're just back to where we belong and what we are all about. You know, it was nice to be a little bit excited when he produced. And, you know, the Christmas period again, that was, I think it was a bounce back to reality to show that there's still a little bit needed. Wolves coming up next and then Fulham. So it's a good little spell, this one, for Spurs going over the Christmas period. When I looked at the fixtures for the next three or four matches, I looked and I thought Spurs with Wolves, Fulham and Leeds, potentially, you know, they can pick up a few results there. But Arsenal, we've just mentioned Arteta. Arsenal, for me, if they can get through this game against Chelsea, which is their next one, which, you know, I think Arteta does not need. They've got a nice little run coming up. They've got Brighton. They're going to give them a little bit of leeway there. Then they've got West Bromwich Albion. And then they've got Crystal Palace going into Newcastle United. So that's why I was saying the pressure could be off Arteta after them four matches after the Chelsea game. And going back to Spurs, I've tried to body swerve it. Yeah, we're back to where we started. It's just what we expect.
I tell you what, it's a nice run or it's a potentially a fatal run, or the other.
The Liverpool game really hurt me, but that's the reality. That's where they are. And if they're doing that with a weakened team, Tottenham and Jose are a long way off. Even though Mourinho thought the worst team lost, I disagree.
And John, on just rounding out the title race chat, we've been pretty critical on this show about Guardiola in terms of their attacking situation. But just to flip it slightly, you know, obviously with the win over Southampton on the weekend, could he actually mount a title charge in a really different way, actually on the foundation of what's now a completely rebuilt defense with, surprisingly, Stones ahead of Laporte?
Yes, because they don't concede. They don't concede goals. They can grind out results, and eventually, you know, they're going to score more goals than not. That at the moment, they're struggling, yes, to score goals. They're struggling really to create clear-cut chances. But they've shown that they can win a different way. And I think that they can still, I wouldn't rule them out of a title race because of that reason. Because of I think Stones is reborn again. And that's because of he's playing alongside Diaz, who's been exceptional. I actually think that defensively, Man City are a lot better. That was a difficult game against Southampton. Southampton are a good side. They put Man City under pressure and they dealt with it. That's a positive sign.
Mm. 8 points off the pace, but a game in hand.
They've got Newcastle next game, correct?
I can tell you that in 1 second.
That could be an absolute... I'm going to call it here. I remember I called it John 5-0 against Burnley a few weeks back. I said City would get a lot in. Game could be catastrophic for Newcastle United and Steve Bruce. They got hammered off Leeds United.
They have got them. They're playing them at home. So Man City playing Newcastle at home.
This could be a big result.
7 a.m. Sunday. Yeah. 7 a.m. Sunday Eastern time.
Because Newcastle are still struggling with a few COVID cases in the squad. The North East has been obliterated. Sunderland Football Club have had to cancel 3 of their matches. I think Millwall have just had to do the same. It's spreading very, very quickly. And I don't think this is going to help Newcastle United one bit with Steve Bruce going up against the City.
So Man City played Newcastle, so Newcastle have got a tough one there. But then the next game, they've got Liverpool, Newcastle. Good luck.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel sorry for them because they have been hurt big time with the COVID situation.
Yeah,
they have indeed. Well, the fixtures, there's no relenting because the fixtures flow in thick and fast for all the players there. For us, it's a treat over the festive period, but we will learn a lot about all the races in the competition over the coming probably fortnight. Now, one man who unfortunately won't be involved in one of those discussions in terms of probably the relegation race is Matt Ryan. I mean, it looks like he's all but done and dusted at Brighton and Hove Albion, just judging by the comments of Graham Potter and then not including him in his squad twice. John, what should Matt Ryan do now?
I think Matt Ryan's got enough points on the board. And what I mean by that, he's played at a high level for a long period and played well, even though Graham Potter doesn't think that he's the one that will suit Brighton and suit them going forward. I think he has to move. I think that he's good enough to get a good move, either in the Premier League or, you know, in La Liga or even Serie A or in Germany. I think that Matt Ryan can't be sitting on the bench or in the stand like he has been. I think he needs to play football because he's our number one goalkeeper for the Socceroos. And he's at that age that he needs to be playing regular football. And he's good enough. He's got enough, I think, like I said before, points on the board that people know what he's capable of doing.
Yeah. That's a surprise, you, Bridgie, that it sort of escalated this quickly. We know we got a warning shot a couple of weeks ago, but
I can't believe how quickly it's done because when he first started, he was absolutely magnificent. And there was a lot of teams taking notice, by the way, that were watching his progress. And it's this season, I mean, he's second bottom in the, you know, the goalkeeping stats of Matty Ryan regarding minutes played, goals conceded, all the stats. He's right down second bottom. Now, I agree with John. I think he's done enough in his first few his matches that were early on in his season to make people wake up. But I tell you what, the stats do not lie. And there's a lot of these clubs or stats, like I know Newcastle United based their signings, that shows where they are, on statistics and players from other leagues that had high stats that they could bring in at a certain age. So Matty Ryan, if it's a stats team that are looking at that, they're going to go, you know, he's not good enough for this. There's other teams and other managers that would have had have a go at him. I just didn't like Potter's comments when he was, it wasn't reassuring. It didn't give him any insight when he was asked, is his future here? There was no, oh yes, definitely. It just spoke volumes. He's gone. Yeah. And the bit that I didn't like, he said that Matt Ryan's distribution and his ability to play out with his feet is not good enough. I don't know. He needs to go back and just look at Matty Ryan's highlight reels from Australian national team, from the teams he's played for. I think his game is based around that and he's a shot stopper. So I really thought that was a huge dig at Matty Ryan from the manager, which goes against everything that I thought his attributes were based on.
as professional players, I'd love to know from your experiences, how do you actually cope with such a situation? And I know it's probably a bit more extreme as a goalkeeper when you know you are pretty much, if you're third, you know, you've gone from starting to the bench, you're in all sorts. But when you're faced with this, A, just the challenge of getting back in the team, but B, like mentally, when you're looking at going, I'm almost being frozen out here.
Yeah. Do you want me to take this one away, John?
Yeah, you can take it, and I'll have a story or two as well, Bridgie.
I'll tell you what, I wish I'd had this advice and listened to the advice from a senior player in Gary Breen, who was my captain at Sunderland. And we just got promoted with Mick McCarthy from the Championship to the Premier League. I'd gone there on loan, and then I'd signed another contract to stay at the football club because we got promoted. There was Marcus Stewart, Stevie Elliott with the strikers, and myself. And we were just playing a bit part that season to get promotion. Everybody played their part. Mick McCarthy got me in and he said, listen, you were third choice last season. You came in, you played your part. I'm going to sign two strikers. You're a great guy. I love having you on the dressing room. Do you want to stay? But you're not going to play. It's going to be bit football. And it was the first manager that's been honest with me and actually put it down and laid the gauntlet down. I thought, well, I could sit here, but the reason I went to Sunderland was to play games because I'd been out with injuries. I went back into the dressing room. I spoke to the captain, Gary Breen, and he said, Bridgie, he said, listen, just sit it out. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be players he signs that are not going to fit in. There's going to be suspensions. You are going to get your chance and your opportunity at some point to play Premier League football again. I thought it was great advice, but in reality, I just went, do you know what it is? I need to go back down to the Championship. And I moved and I went to Bristol City. And biggest, worst decision I have ever made, because the Premier League, Sunderland struggled. They had an injury crisis. They had suspensions. I would have been playing in the third game of the season. And who knows what could have happened then. So I look back and wish I'd listened to advice. So what I'm saying is, Matty Ryan, if he can sit tight and he's got long enough to sit there and wait it out, there might be a change in manager. You never know. There could be an injury crisis. I'd love to see him just stick it out for a challenging part, because it'll make him mentally stronger. It'll be another niche in his armour for him to battle through to prove what it takes to be a top-class keeper.
I played with Gary Breen at Coventry, and he got frozen. Yeah, he got frozen out by Gordon Strachan, and he sat it out, trained hard, trained the house down, really, and waited for his opportunity. And once he got that opportunity again, he played and became Coventry City captain. So it was that was from his experience, Bridgie. He was talking from the experience that he had. And look, the same thing happened to me at Portsmouth. Alan Ball came in. He told me at the end of the season he didn't want any of the Australians that were signed under Terry Venables at the time with Portsmouth. And he said, you're going to be not my first choice striker, not my second, not my third. You're going to be like my sixth choice striker, because I'm going to try and sign as many players as possible in that position. So I recommend you find another football club. I had nothing to go to. So I had nothing better than what I was already at Portsmouth. So I stuck it out and worked hard, trained hard, and tried to convince him by doing that I was good enough to play. I ended up getting my chances, Bridgie. 1-2 minutes here, 3-4 minutes there. All of a sudden, it comes a little bit longer, 30 minutes, score goals. By November, I had scored 17 goals in all comps, and I got a move to the Premier League with Coventry City. So sometimes when you do stick it out, that can happen. It can actually turn around.
I think that's a valuable lesson for anybody listening. Do you know what I mean? That can pass on advice to even just some of the kids that are playing locally in academies around the country, MPL clubs, you know, the transition. Sometimes it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. And it shows true character for the ones that are willing to roll their sleeves up. So fair play to you, John.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wonder if it's a slightly different situation for a goalkeeper. I mean, that's the challenge there, because you're probably almost relying on
an injury. We should have got Swartzy on.
Well, actually, good segue, John. Good play, because Schwartzy does tackle this issue on the Two Sharp Reds podcast. So you can listen to the Two Sharp Reds. You can listen to this on the Gagan Pod. It's an important issue for us here, Socceroos fans. So we have tackled it well this week, which is the last thing I want to ask you, John. When I say to you this weekend, there'll be no Australians playing in the Premier League, what's your reaction to that?
Sad. It's a sad moment because, look, only Matty Ryan was really flying the flag after Aaron Moy left. And when Bridgie was playing Premier League football, how many Australians were there, Bridgie? There was at least over 15, 20 Australians.
I had seven. I had seven at Leeds United with me.
Yeah,
they were like flies. They were like pests.
It's incredible. We were like the adopted English. You know, there was that many Aussies everywhere that they loved us. And it's a sad moment for Australian football because it's the best league in the world. It's the competition that is most watched around the world, and we haven't got one representative.
John, I don't want to be disrespectful. There was a lot of Australians playing in the league that then. And I'm not saying it was easier because the league was easier, but it was a lot easier to get access into the Premier League because of the work permit situation. I think what's made it hard now is the Brazilians that are in there, the Croatians and the South African players that are able to join the league. That's made it incredibly harder. But that generation of players that you were with, I'm talking about playing with Harry Kewell and Mark Viduka. I think Viduka could have and should have been the best player in the world. Harry Kewell was definitely up there with them. One had a different attitude as a worker, and Viduka found it very easy because it was natural. I don't know where the next lot of players like that are going to come from with the quality that you guys had. And I don't know how you can emulate and replicate that. What I'm saying is it is a lot tougher nowadays, but there's nowhere near the standard of football and ability that your group of players had.
It's the multi-million dollar question, the billion dollar question. It's a podcast series. It's a deep dive. It's everything. It's what we've been talking about probably for how many years, John? And we will continue to. But yeah, for right now, it's actually come to a head with no one there this weekend.
I think it's a tragedy. I mean, I've been here 11 years now. And, you know, I've always had a really good culture with Australians, and because I played with so many of them at Leeds United, it was work hard, play hard, and that's what I loved. And I came over here and I embraced the culture, and it's just such a shame to see every single year less Australians playing in. I'm not talking about the Premier League, I'm talking about top leagues in Europe and around the world. Yeah. It's not just the Premier League. There is a lot of other leagues out there, and it is just it's been obliterated. So there's something fundamentally wrong.
Well, yeah, and to answer your question before, John, just before the World Cup in 2006, there were 13 Aussies in the Premier League, 9 of whom played more than 10 games. And something resonated me when I caught up with Harry Kewell in a bonus Gagan Pod last week, where he was reflecting on the Stuttgart game against Croatia. And he said, we played that game and we were at better clubs. We didn't fear them because we knew that we're playing at their level or above. And that's something we're not getting at the moment.
I'm going to leave you with one thing. So if anybody's listening that's got any input or can help out with this, I wish they could change the rules and the laws regarding you've got to be 18 to go and play overseas now. Because I know Harry moved when he was 15. A lot of the players were able to do that from Ireland to come into England. The FIFA changed the laws and they changed the rules. If you're going to go and make it at an academy, you've got to go when you are 15 or 16 or when you finish school to go and be part of their academy. I think the boy Robertson, is it Mark Robertson's son's over there? He took a plunge because he was able to embrace with his family and do that. It's a huge upheaval for your families to go and do that, but the laws need to change from Australian players to be able to leave at an earlier age. Because if I am an academy owner and a director, and I can only sign an 8-year-old from Australia who's missed out on 2 or 3 years development under my supervision and our philosophy, you've got no chance of getting in. You have got to be one of the world's best players to get into that academy. So until the laws change and become 15 or 16 again, I hope James Johnson with his contacts can try and push this through for the sake of Australian juniors, because clubs will not touch lads who are 18, 19 and 20 anymore.
Interesting stuff. Let's hope we can see a tight end. Ajan Hristic made his debut in the Bundesliga on the weekend, so that was really positive to see. And Mitch Langerak just broke a record for clean sheets in Japan. So the two positives, we'll take those, but we need a lot more. Hey, I'm just going to bring back an old segment. He said what? I don't have that fantastically high-tech little intro we used to have. So that's all you're getting.
He said what?
Exactly. And I want to go to an interview in AS in Spain that Mo Salah gave, where he obviously was given the probing leading questions about going to Barca and Real Madrid and had to strafe at them and big headlines being made out of it. But the one that took my attention was about the captaincy against Midtjylland, which went to Trent Alexander-Arnold. And he said, honestly, I was very disappointed. I was expecting to be the captain, but it's the manager's decision, so I expect it. And a bit of a stir overnight when one of his former Egyptian teammates, Mohamed Aboutrika, sort of gave an interview throwing a bit of a fire in the works that Salah might look to leave Liverpool at some point. Obviously, since it's come out and as happens since in the next 24 hours, there's been some question marks over the translation and whatnot. But there's definitely something simmering there. It's been carried in all the major papers and whatnot. I just want to throw to you guys your reaction to Mohamed Salah saying that. And particularly in light with what we spoke about earlier about his competitiveness, just your reaction to those headlines.
Let Mr. Spain answer this one.
Yeah, look. Obviously, the Spanish papers, and that's a Real Madrid paper. That's a big Real Madrid paper. So they're actually pushing that he can go to Real Madrid. They're not dumb, those people. They know what they're doing. So, look, I think with that, I think sometimes you have to understand it gets taken out of context. He might have just said, look, I was disappointed, yeah, that I wasn't made captain because I was the most experienced player in the side. He's not a captain. And we spoke about it before because of his, nature of being a little bit selfish. He wants to be the one that scores the most goals. He wants to be the leading goal scorer of the Premier League. He wants to beat Mane in that little one-on-one competition that they got. That's not captain material. So, look, I think that Klopp is 100% right in not giving him the captain's armband because I don't think he's got that in him. And you don't want to take that selfishness away from him. You want to try and control it because that's what makes him. So, is there a little bit more to it? Will he end up leaving Liverpool? Probably in the next year or two. I think that Liverpool will probably cash in and then go sign someone like a Sancho because they'll keep on wanting to, sort of rejuvenate their side because you can become a bit stale when you keep the same players for a long period.
Question for you then, John. If you're the manager, you're Klopp, and you had to lose one of the three, Firmino, Mane and Salah, which one would you sacrifice? Or which one would you keep definitely?
With questions like that, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee because that's fantastic.
You know, you can't go past Salah's numbers.
Yeah,
his numbers are off the charts. The amount of goals he scores is incredible. Even when he's not playing well, he seems to pop up and score. I think that Mane gives you more. I think Mane gives you more. I think Mane can score goals. He can set up goals, but he also, his pressing is, you talk about Liverpool's high octane sort of way of football. That's Mane. And then, probably the one that I could let go, even though he's a top player, is Firmino. I think that you could replace him with someone else, but he's definitely, he suits Liverpool the way they play. So he will probably be the one that would make way and bring in another striker.
Yeah, there you go.
Good stuff. Now, before we head into the Gegendors, just two hit or miss statements from you guys just to end off. First one to you, Bridgie. If I say the Premier League bottom three will stay as is, concludes our chat from a bit earlier. Do you think it's Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield United with 5 months to go, or is there a big twist to come and a big casualty?
The big twist is Sheffield United can finish in the European spot, Dave Weiner. Not. They are gone. There is no recovery. Sheffield United have gone. West Brom under Sam Allardyce, if they had kept Slaven Bilic, I would have said they're gone. With Sam, you just never know. There's something about it. He's got the track record. The stats do not lie. And, the first red card that happened to Livermore, the captain, he's just come out and just annihilated him. So straight away, Sam has been able to get his ownership and what he expects from the players over in week one, thanks to his captain totally disregarding anything they're about and discipline. Fulham, I really like the way they've been playing, and I think they can get out of trouble. I'm going to say that it could be a Brighton that gets sucked into that bottom. And that's why I'm saying to Matty Ryan, just hang around because Potter might not be the manager soon.
Interesting, yeah. Well, there's going to be another twist. It doesn't end in December.
Tell you what, though. I reckon there could be another team from London down there, and that could be Arsenal.
Just imagine it.
No, you don't want to imagine a team like Arsenal.
No, I don't. I'm a Spurs fan, and Arsenal, that I don't want to see them. No, I want to see them get up and out of that. Not too high, but yeah, they cannot get relegated.
No,
but it would be funny.
It wouldn't be funny if you're an Arsenal fan, that's for sure. No.
John, I just want to throw a different topic at you on that we haven't touched on too much, but going to the Christmas period, AC Milan are still top of Serie A. What do you make of that? And is that sustainable going forward? Inter Milan are breathing down their necks. We know the big guns, Juventus, are going to be there or thereabouts and recover. AC Milan and Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I think they will be there or thereabouts. Have they got enough to win it? I don't think they've got the depth in their squad to win it. I think they're overachieving at the moment in their results being top of the table. I like the way that they've been playing. And, you know, Zlatan's been on fire, even though the last games two, he's been injured. So I don't know how long he's going to be out for. I still think Inter Milan are the only team that can push Juventus. I think Juventus, even though there was a slowest start under Pirlo, they won 4-0 the other day against Parma, their best performance of the season. They're slowly getting it right. I think Pirlo will get it right. I think he's very calm the way he goes about things. He's precise in the way he makes his decisions. I think that they will get it right. And Inter Milan, Conte, I think that, again, he's very criticised in Italy. They're smashing him all over the place, but they're up there and they've got a squad to do it. I think he'll get rid of Eriksen in January, or Eriksen will want to go, and there'll be a bit more harmony within the team, because there's issues in terms of Eriksen not being happy and coming out in the public and criticising Conte for not playing him.
There's a lot of good players to keep happy there, though. That's why I respect what Lampard is doing at Chelsea at this moment. Yeah, Conte's struggling with that.
No, Conte's a different character, though. Conte does. I think that Frank's is a better man manager. You can tell the way Frank manages the group, and even in his interviews. And whereas Conte is ruthless. Like I read something about one of his ex players that he coached. I don't know if it was Gianluigi Buffon. This is a while ago. Said he can cut you with his words. And so, you know, I can just imagine Antonio Conte, what he can actually say to an individual that would really hurt him. He did an interview the other day where Fabio Capello, one of the most famous Italian coaches, he just didn't answer him. He just completely blanked him. And you're thinking, you're doing this on national television that you just don't answer someone that's so respected in the game.
Yeah, but Johnny Capello knew exactly what he was doing. He was just putting the spanner in the works and just poking the monkey in the cage and going, come on, have a reaction.
It was funny. But it's something that I think that Inter Milan can push Juventus. I don't think AC Milan can do it. That's the shorter answer.
But it's nice to see the fallen giant, in inverted commas, back up in contention. And I guess that's what everyone is watching. And Europa League as well. So good to see some competition there in Italy once again. Gents, it's time. We promised it for the Gegendors, right? The Ballon d'Or was cancelled this year. So we've gone in with our own. This is the one that everyone wants, the Optusport Awards, judged by Johnny and Bridgie. But it's a nice way to wrap up.
That's another good little intro for you.
It's a nice way to wrap up the year. Some 62-odd podcasts later, here we are. And through thick and thin, and it has been one hell of a year. Bridgie, what's the moment you'll never forget?
See if you can guess.
Oh, jeez.
There was a team that had never been there for 16 years.
The moment they got promoted.
Yeah, the moment Leeds United got promoted, just to be for them after playing a pivotal part in their second decent generation. You know, when they went on to win European football with Eddie Gray and the likes, it was just great to be there. Love the fans, the way they embraced myself coming from a championship as a player and having to be thrown at the deep end, and the years of hurt that they've gone through, just to see them finally come back to the Premier League in the after the centennial year, it was just a magic moment.
Yeah, I think you can't go past football shutting down due to COVID. That was just a moment that I'll never forget. Hopefully, I'll never see it again. But at the moment, it still could be on the cards in the future. But talking about a game that I'll never forget was Bayern Munich 8, Barcelona 2. I never thought I would see that. And it could have been 15. I think 8 was doing Barcelona a favour because they just got completely slaughtered. And that will be a game that I'll never forget because Bayern they were unbelievable.
I love what the Optusports social team had on their scorecard for that game, which was you'd ate to see it with 8-2 instead of 8-2. Very good on their feet. Now, that could very well be the most bizarre moment of the year because Barcelona copping 8 in a high-stakes Champions League game is right up there. But what was the moment that you laughed out loud on, Bridgie, or the most random or most bizarre thing that you saw this year?
What I loved, I love managers. And I love it when they get irate on the sideline and things like that. The bizarre one for me, or the funniest one, was Frank Lampard and Klopp on the sideline. You've got a guy that's won everything and you've got a new kid on the block, should we say. And Lampard gave it to Klopp in the funniest possible way. And it was almost like the players behind the Liverpool bench were going, he cannot talk to our gaffer like that. And Frank was not fazed one bit. He really smashed Klopp. I just love that kind of stuff. And that went viral. There was a lot of, because with there being no fans, we heard exactly what they could say. And again, it was the Optus social team that sent something out and it was blooming brilliant.
But bizarre moment, it probably wasn't funny and definitely random, was Premier League champions losing to a team that just stayed up 7-2, like Liverpool losing to Aston Villa. I just found that completely bizarre, that you would never expect that. And seeing Liverpool now actually top of the table, what the hell happened that
place? So, John, you've just mentioned two massive results. Barca getting smashed off Bayern, Liverpool getting smashed off Villa. We've just seen Leeds United get destroyed 6-2. We saw Liverpool beat Palace 7-0. There has been some scorelines that you normally see once or twice in Premier League history in a season. Was it 7-0 for Spurs Southampton or 5? I can't remember this season.
It was Spurs winning at Man United 6-1.
That's what I mean. It's just my wife doesn't like football. And she said the other morning, she went, why is there so many crazy scorelines going on? And I couldn't answer it. I just don't know what it is. But that has been the most, I agree, the bizarre results that have gone around the world during COVID since we've come back. And it's just been weird.
Well, during that crazy period, who's been your favourite player to watch?
You know what, Bridgie, I know you like him as a player. And he's one that I think if they don't have him in their side, I don't think they're going to get too many results. I love watching Jack Grealish. I think every time he gets the ball, I know he's not the name like a De Bruyne, he's not like the Messi or Ronaldo's that everyone loves watching, but every time Jack Grealish gets the ball, it seems like something's going to happen. And, he's doing it every game now. So he's at that, and he's not doing it at a big club. And we're talking about, no disrespect to Aston Villa, but they're not a club that's going to challenge for the Premier League this season or probably in the near future. Or Champions League, and he's doing it and to any opposition. So I love watching him play. I think that at the moment, he's one of my favourite players to watch, definitely.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I said he was more exciting for England, like a Paul Gascoigne from the past, players that make you get off your seats and stand up and appreciate it. So I think that's a really good call, John, but I thought you were going to go I've got to go back to Tottenham. And it's Son. I just love Son. I think
I did have him, Bridgie. I did have it, yeah.
He's another player, John, that I think if he's not there, they really, really struggle. And he's just starting to show his true character as well. He's starting to embrace the culture, where he put out a thing saying with his mom and his dad, and it was Huntsman's son and his mum and his dad. Yeah. That was just brilliant. So he's a player that I really admire. And you think the price tag that he came to Spurs for and what he's worth now, he's just a player I love watching.
The only reason why I took him off, there's two reasons. I couldn't work out whether the Puskas goal was in 2019 and
it
not
was
2019.
It was December 2019. Yes. Yeah.
And then also under Mourinho, he's seeing less and less of the ball. So I don't like him watching him defend so much.
Neither does he.
Oh, dear. He's got to get a move so we can get the Gegendor again. That's one of the consequences of Mourinho. We were a bit downcast earlier on Australian football, but John, who's been the best Socceroo performer and Matilda performer at club level in 2020? Because there's obviously been no international football.
Mitch Langerak.
Mm-hmm. Oh, ditto.
Yeah, I think Mitch Langerak has shown that he's a top keeper. I've always liked Mitch. I think that when he was burst onto the scene at Melbourne Victory, you know, you had to really hit a ball in the top corner, Dave, to beat them to the Premier's plate to get past him. I don't know if you remember that goal, Dave. I was just popping my entire up, Bridgie. Mitch Langerak, I think he's been brilliant in Japan. Broken records, keeping clean sheets. I wish that he went back to Europe and tried to get back into the Bundesliga or one of the top leagues in Europe, because I think he's good enough. I really do. So he's been the star performer. And Caitlin Ford. I like the way she's, Sam Kerr's now finding a feet at Chelsea, but Caitlin Ford, I think that she's been superb for Arsenal, and I just love the way she plays.
Yeah. Who's going to burst onto the scene in world football next year? Who's going to be the young gun to watch?
Now, was this European football or was this Australians?
Anywhere. Anywhere.
I mean, I think I was looking at the Australian boys that are around the country playing, who could potentially, I was just thinking who's going to get out there. We all know Harry Suter's at Stoke. You've got Lachlan Brook at Brentford. But I'll tell you what, Popovic, his boys at Greece, Christian Popovic. I'm hoping you want to see players get a chance and an opportunity in European football. He's had opportunities under his father. I would like to see one of them, just whether it's Stoke getting promoted or Brentford coming back or Popovic's lad getting a move to a team, I'd like to see an Australian get up next season at the Premier League. And they're the boys that stood out for me.
Yeah, good stuff. I like that one, Bridgie.
I'll go with European football. Youssoufa Moukoko. Is that how you say his name?
Something like that.
Yeah, for Borussia Dortmund.
Everybody's after him.
By the way, Bridgie, his goal on the weekend, they ended up losing to Union Berlin, but his goal was brilliant. The way he took it, his forward run, and the way he hit it near post, just above the keeper's head, unbelievable power, and that's what he's got. He's got goals in him. We spoke about him a few weeks ago, I think. That how many goals he scored in the second team. At he's broken all records down in the divisions that a little bit lower. So I think he's going to be the one that really will burst onto the scene in 2021.
At the tender age of barely 16 and a half years old.
This is the difference I'm talking about. At 16 years of age, if you're in these academies, you're going to get your chance by the time you're 18. If you're not, you're gone. This is why it's so hard. We talk about the Australians. I look at the American national team we discussed in a podcast recently as well. Their average age was like 20 or something.
Yeah.
Mental. So, yeah. Good call.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for him. His youth stats, I'm trying to find them quickly, but I can't. They're ridiculous. Out of this world, ridiculous. Out of this world, ridiculous. Best and worst Premier League signing this season? There's a bit of choice for both.
Oh, I think this season it has to be, and this season, I'm not talking about this current season, I'm talking about in 2020. Bruno Fernandes signed in.
Yep.
He gave it away earlier on.
Yep. He's been my favourite signing. I think he's been one that's really, we talk about Jack Grealish there being the one that makes Aston Villa tick. Son and Kane at Tottenham, but without Bruno Fernandes, Man United wouldn't even make top six. Yeah, I think that with him, they're a chance to actually still make Champions League again for next season, and maybe with a little bit of luck, even push Liverpool.
And your worst?
I don't look at the worst. I'm a glass half full. I don't like to look at you can't go past Joel Linton, but he signed about 3 years ago, didn't he, Bridgie?
I tell you what, Arsenal fans might be nominating Villian.
I've got to say, I've got one for you. John went for 2020. If that was the case, I would have had Fernandes as well completely. But I'd looked at it from this season with Thiago Silva coming in at Chelsea.
Yep.
Grealish re-signing. I think that was a major coup for them. Ollie Watkins has come in and done amazing things. He's shown that the a championship player can make the step up. And a player that I really admire, Rodriguez, coming in at Everton. The left foot wand. It was good to see him in the Premier League. But I've gone for Jota of Liverpool for the best signing. Just think he's given them, instead of seeing an Origi come on to save the day, you know, you've got a man now that's pushing them front three, four in a regular spot. So that was a good one. And then the worst player, like you say, I looked through a few of the Arsenal signings, and the one for me was Willian coming from Chelsea. The first game he played for Arsenal after moving, he was absolutely magnificent. And he's just gone into hibernation, and he has just gone, you know what it is, stuff this, I'm down in tools. And his performance the other day was disgraceful. And listening to the guys on the Arsenal TV, it was just Willian's bleep, the lazy bleep. So he gets it for me. It's really disappointing.
Yeah, there's a prominent Arsenal blog called The Arse Blog, and he's calling him the worst signing in Arsenal history. So it's a pretty big call, but he's really annoying a lot of Arsenal supporters with his output. So, as a Chelsea fan, he gave us great service over the years, but I think you're fair to say Lampard got rid of him at the right time. All right, the podium's up. No Ballon d'Or this year, but the Gagan d'Or, the three players that make the gold, silver and bronze for Johnny and Bridgie. Now, I've given you the choice, whether it's Premier League only or overall or both. Opened up the carpet for you. What have we got? We'll go to you. You look very excited, Bridgie. I'll go with you first. The anticipation's killing you.
Oh, no. I was just hoping that John had something so he could inspire me. All right, I'll take it away. I'm a goal scorer. I've gone for Lewandowski. The amount of goals that man scored has just been absolutely insane. And I think he did miss out on an award. Was it the Golden Boot or something he missed out on?
No, he missed out on the Ballon d'Or.
It was a Ballon d'Or. That's what it was. Yeah. So that's why he's getting my Gagan d'Or, because of that moment. I don't think you can look past. I've gone for a bit of an old god. You can't go past Ronaldo. What he has done at Juve since he's moved. Now he's done it in three countries. He just ceases to amaze me. And the other man that I'm going for is another absolute ancient legend that gets better with age. And he's playing Serie A. They're top of the league. It's AC Milan and it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I don't know how he does it or what he does. He's a true professional. And I love players that are arrogant and egotistical, but they back it up. I can't stand these false players that I've played with in the past. Kieran Dyer was one of them. I don't mind saying that. They're just full of wind. He backs it up and he does what he's about.
You know what? I actually will agree with you, Bridgie, for once. Lewandowski is, for me, the Gagan d'Or winner, because he was by far the best player this season. Yeah. Consistent scoring every game, won the Champions League. And I still believe, I like that, you know, a lot of the time it's who wins a Champions League or who wins a World Cup or whoever. Normally you get a player from that team. So he definitely would win it. I would call someone from Liverpool because the way they won the Premier League, I think they won it by a country mile. And I thought Mane is that we spoke about him before. I think without him in the side, they're nowhere near as strong. And I just love watching him play. And then I'm going to go for one that's very much maligned, Dave, Neymar. There was talk about Neymar at the beginning of last season not being, you know, his heart's not in it at Paris Saint-Germain. The supporters were against him. The press were against him. He wanted out of France. They wanted him out of France. He stuck it out and proved to everyone that he could actually turn that Paris Saint-Germain team into contenders in the Champions League. And they did. They went to the final. Yes, he probably didn't perform the way he would have liked in the final. But I would say that Neymar was up there.
Do you want my Nostradamus?
Nostradamus. That's where we're going to end. And
Bridgie, you usually get these wrong, though. You're Nostradamus, but you get them wrong.
This is why you've... John, these aren't just moments. These are visions. When I look into my big nose and I get this reflection in the window and I just see these visions of things that are going to happen in the future, mate. This one will throw you.
I'm seeing visions because I've been looking at you, that Olaf snowman carrot nose coming out of your screen for the last hour.
I had to take it off. I was getting too hot, man. Christmas jumpers are not made for Australia. I've had to change it to a T-shirt.
Go on. I want to know the big call for 2021. And just quietly, if there was one that you made over the last year that you would like us to wipe from the Optusport archives as well?
All of them, please. Every single one of them. No, this is going out there. I'll stick by it. Messi will leave Barcelona and go to Manchester City. No. And Ronaldo will join Manchester United. And they will go head-to-head again in the Premier League.
That is a big, big call,
at the end of this season. Watch this space.
That is a big call. Mine's nowhere near as big as that. Mine is more...
but it's all proportional, John. It's all the Nostradamus proportional.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. My nose is not as big as Bridgie's, so I have to scale it down a little bit. I'm going to go for who's going to be the Euro winners.
Yep.
I think that there could be about eight teams that could win the Euro, eight countries that could win the Euro, but I'm going to throw Spain as my team that will win it. With a very young side, I think that the way that they're performing, that 6-0 win against Germany showed what they're capable of doing. And I think with Luis Enrique in charge, they're going to be the winners. And it's going to be a cracking competition. And where can you watch it, Bridgie?
Only on Optus Sport.
Exactly right. So that's my Nostradamus for 2021.
Ooh. Brilliant. And on that note, gents, we've made it. It's been one hell of a year. But you know what? We are so lucky because through thick and thin, we've been able to sit here and talk football. And we're blessed to be able to do that. We're blessed that the sport's given us all something to hang on to during the year. Hopefully a distraction for everyone during a tough time. Hopefully this show's been a bit of fun for our listeners, whether you've been listening to it or reading from it, from the articles that come from it, or watching on the Optusport app or social channels. That's what we genuinely hope. So thank you both for joining me so often.
What I do have to say, Dave, is that COVID, the days were long, but the year flew past. And that was because we're talking about football. Even though it's been a tough year, football has been, I think, better than ever. I really do. Let's hope the crowds get back in to enjoy it again. I know there's been a few stadiums that had a couple of thousand people there in the Premier League, but the football itself, I think that football is just getting better and better, and we're just privileged to be part of such a wonderful sport.
It's made people realise what it is about. You know, at times in my career when I was injured and you're thinking about giving it all up, but when you get a taste of it once again, it's that buzz, that feeling. I think that's exactly what the players have felt, the coaches and the fans around the world. And Merry Christmas to everybody listening, especially to you two lads. Enjoy it. All the best. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's great to have a bit of banter and talk serious. And stay safe, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, well said. Yep.
Merry
said.
Christmas.
Yes, so look, there's a stack of football between now and the next Gegenpod, the Premier League this weekend, Boxing Day, New Year's period. We'll be back early in 2021. Good riddance to 2020 to do it all again with your midweek football fix. So as ever, or more than ever, until the next Gegenpod, thanks for your company and enjoy your football.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.